Celebrating the connection with our pets. This is Animal Radio, featuring your dream team, veterinarian Dr. Debbie White and groomer Joey Villani. And here are your hosts, Hal Abrams and Judy Francis.
Here comes another incredible show. Judy has booked an amazing guest, a couple of amazing guests. One we've had on before, Shannon Kopp. You might remember her. What was it, 2016?
2016, with her book, Pound for Pound.
Yeah, she was real sick. She was a bulimic, throwing up about 20 times a day. And she went to therapy. She went to rehab. Absolutely nothing worked for her. You know, she could have died. She ended up at a shelter, I believe a humane society in Southern California, to help out and to volunteer time. And that's when things changed for her dramatically. And she stopped with the throwing up.
Wow, it turned her life around.
It really did. And you know what? She noticed that it turned her life around so much, she thought maybe it could turn other people's lives around. So she's created a brand new 501c3 called Soul Paws. Soul Paws Recovery. And she'll be joining us and telling us all about that. Also very exciting on the show today, and I wish you could see this picture. I'll hold it up to the microphone so you can see it.
I love that.
It's a picture of a possum. And is it possum or opossum?
That's an opossum.
What's the difference?
There's a difference. There's the opossum, and then there's a possum.
Really?
Really?
Yeah, a lot of people call, you know, our North American opossums possums, but they really aren't. It's a totally different animal in different parts of the world.
So I did not know that.
Yeah, we have opossums in North America, and in Australia, New Zealand, all of those islands, they have possums. And there is a big difference. Their faces look different. You know, the opossum, as we know, has no hair on its tail. It's got that kind of almost like a rat tail.
Yeah.
And then the possum, it has quite the beautiful tail. It's very bushy. And then their faces are very different. Our possums have little pointy noses, and then the, you know, the New Zealand ones are quite attractive, I think. I'm sorry.
Well, so what's the one that visits me at night, that hangs out, only comes out at night? Is that a possum or opossum?
That would be an opossum.
She just explained. We only have opossums here.
Yeah.
Okay. And they're a marsupial. Now, I know how mammals procreate, but I got to tell you, I have no idea how a marsupial procreates.
The difference is a marsupial, you know, they still breed. I'm not going to get into marsupial sex, but the difference is that the babies actually are in the pouch for a good part of their development. So instead of being within the womb and only being in the womb, they actually spend part of their time inside the pouch, where they go on to develop further.
Well, now, how do they get from one place to the other?
The little babies crawl in there.
Okay. I'm still confused as ever on this whole thing, but I'm looking forward to this. The reason I bring up the opossum is we're going to be talking to an opossum rescue today. Well, not the rescue, but a lady who works at an opossum.
Very cool.
There's all kinds of rescues. I never heard of an opossum rescue.
This is the first. I didn't realize that there was a need for them. And I've learned that they apparently don't live very long lives either. So we're going to find out about that coming up in just a few minutes right here on Animal Radio. Lori, what are you working on over there in the newsroom?
Talking about unusual rescues, I remember a koi rescue that we did a story on. I thought that was fascinating. So there are tons of different kinds. I have not heard of a goldfish rescue, because there were some goldfish that were rescued from a California fire. And we will they were in a very small pond. Amazing that they survived. But we'll give you their story.
That's on the way. Let's go to the phones for your calls. Let's go to Margie. Hi, Margie. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks.
Where are you calling from today?
St. Louis, Missouri.
I love St. Louis, especially lately. How are you guys doing? You managing?
I've got two cats, and my female's about 17 years old, I think. And I've never had a problem with her with shedding before, but I've got a Furminator. Now it seems like that's all she's doing is shedding. And even when I comb her with it, it keeps coming out. She looks like
How often have you used the Furminator on her?
I used it because she was kind of mad in the spring, and then I just use it whenever I see the fur starting to come up on her, I've been using this instead of a brush on her, and I was wondering if there's any harm in that, because even if I finish combing her, maybe 10 minutes later, she'll be laying down, she'll get up, and she still leaves tufts of fur.
Well, there's a couple of things. Number one, with the Furminator, I know it's sold to the general public, but it's more of a professional tool. It's something that you should not apply much pressure at all. You should just use the weight of the tool itself to actually go through it. And sometimes you may have to do it for quite some time, for a couple of days, and then consistently do it over the next few weeks, at least a couple of times each week, in order to get all that dead coat out, especially if it's something that you don't do on a regular base. I like something that's a little bit better for people at home, and that's a rubber curry brush that you can buy in any of your local pet stores. And I'm not saying that the Furminator is a wonderful tool that works great, but this is probably a little bit easier for you to use because really you don't have to worry about hurting the pet, cutting the coat, or damaging. And the cats will kind of like it because it almost feels like a massage. Now, the other thing it could be a combination. It could be, as your pets start getting older, their coat changes a little bit. They start to shed a little bit more. It could also be the environment. You know, pets' coats actually work, just like the environment. When the environment changes, so does their coat. I mean, so it could be a bunch of different things, but I think if you either kept using your Furminator or you went out and bought that curry brush, it'll definitely reduce it. And the other thing, which you may want to talk to our veterinarian about, is might be nutritional as well. But I think the more that you use the equipment, the more it's going to start to reduce.
Margie, I do have to jump in, and Joey, definitely some great ideas there. For what you're describing, this is not at all uncommon in a double-digit senior kitty. So meaning when I got grandma kitties of 17 years of age, one of the very common things people describe is that the pets have these clumps of hair coming out of them. And the reason is that we don't see them grooming like a younger cat does for various reasons. Sometimes it can be things like we have dental problems and oral pain, and it doesn't feel good to groom like they used to. Other times it can be things like arthritis, and it's uncomfortable to turn around and to groom themselves like they used to. And otherwise, other medical things that can be more internal. So for me, if I see this on a physical exam with an old kitty, there's some things I can do medically to help. We'd have to examine your kitty and check some things out, but sometimes simple as glucosamine supplement can help with some of the arthritic discomfort. And then staying up with the regular grooming as Joey described. And the one thing I will point out, and I know Joey, you've had experience with this, old cats, their skin is very thin and prone to injury. So I was just shuddering in my boots here when you said you were using a Furminator, because it is so easy for an elderly cat to get injured with a well-intended pet owner, either, brushing mats out or trying to cut them out. So, this may be something you do need to either see your veterinarian or a professional groomer to get a little bit of help and make sure we don't have those mats building up causing skin infection underneath there.
Yeah, right now the only place she gets, I know she's been losing teeth or something because her tongue's starting to stick out of her mouth a little bit.
There you go. Yeah. So this would be a reason I would tell you need to take your kitty to the vet, because if her tongue is sticking out and we have drool, those are two key symptoms of oral pain. So please check things out with your veterinarian.
Okay, and I've got another question about cat food.
Okay.
Both of my cats like pork. I mean, when I have pork sticks or a pork roast, they sit there, and my little female, she'll sit there with her little paw out, and she'll paw me for it, Mm-hmm. And I've been to the grocery store and pet stores, and I look at all the ingredients on the cat foods, but there's never any pork. It's always lamb, beef, chicken, turkey, fish, but there's never any pork.
Yeah, it's not a real common protein ingredient in pet foods for various reasons. But I think some of the other white meats tend to be a little bit, lower in the fat content. That's a great question. I would love to ask some of the food manufacturers, why they've passed over the pig.
Yeah, because, I've talked to one of the clerks at the supermarket, and he says his cat likes pork steak bones. He said he threw one out for his dog, and the cat ran out and grabbed it. When he was finished with it, then the dog got it.
But well,
I know we had a dog at one time, a dachshund, that was chewing on a pork roast bone, and he ended up, we took him to the emergency vet because he was getting sick, and they said that it was pancreatitis, that pork does that to dogs.
Yeah, and that's where higher fat foods, whether it be, you know, home cooked foods, table scraps, or meats, if they have higher fat contents, that is a concern that can actually trigger a problem with the pancreas, causing abdominal pain, vomiting. It can be life-threatening. So, yeah, that may be part of the reason pork isn't our mainstay in dogs and cats.
Does that answer some questions for you there, Margie?
It sure does.
Hey, thanks for listening.
Thank you very much.
Margie's listening on KTRS AM 550 in St. Louis. Well, this portion of Animal Radio is underwritten by Kensington Books. Curl Up with a 12 Days of Snowball by Kristen McKenna. It's an adorably funny novel featuring a matchmaking cat named Snowball. The 12 Days of Snowball. It's a perfect read for animal lovers or anyone looking for romance. Pick up your copy today anywhere books are sold or visit KristenMcKenna.com. That's KristenMcKanagh.com. And thanks, Kensington, for underwriting Animal Radio.
You're listening to Animal Radio. Call the Dream Team now with the free Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android.
Dogs or cats, horse or emu, animals are people too.
In China, a toy black leopard caused a near riot. The 3-foot stuffed animal looked enough like a leopard to scare both dogs and pedestrians. One witness described the scene, saying people were running for their lives, some of them running into traffic, causing a traffic jam. Eventually, police arrived with an armed anesthetist from a local zoo. After observing the leopard for a while, one of the officers got the nerve to walk over and touch it and found out it was a toy. I'm Britt Savage for Animal Radio.
Animals are people too. Animal Radio.
The old way of living with diabetes is a pain. You've got to remember to do your testing and always need to stick your fingers to test your blood sugar. The new way to live your life with diabetes is with a continuous glucose monitor. Apply a discrete sensor on your body and it continuously monitors your glucose levels, helping you spend more time in range and freeing you from painful finger sticks. If you are living with type 1 or type 2 diabetes and you administer insulin 3 or more times per day or use an insulin pump, you might be eligible for a CGM through your insurance benefits. U.S. Med partners with over 500 private insurance companies and Medicare. We offer free shipping, 90-day supplies, and we bill your insurance. Call us today for a free benefits check.
800-785-1673. 800-785-1673. 800-785-1673. That's 800-785-1673.
You're listening to Animal Radio. Call the Dream Team now with the free Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android.
It is Animal Radio, and in just a few minutes, we're going to be talking to Shannon Kopp. You might remember her. We talked to her about 6 months ago. She was the gal that had that horrible eating disorder, a bulimia, I believe, and she was throwing up 20 times a day after she ate.
Wow.
And there was nothing that could fix her. She went to therapy. She had all kinds of doctors. It wasn't until she met a dog at, I believe, a San Diego or Los Angeles dog pound. I guess no one says pound anymore. A dog shelter. And she met this dog and her life changed. She started taking care of the dog and she started taking care of herself. And we'll be talking to her in just a few minutes right here on Animal Radio. Lori, what are you working on over there?
Well, there's one country that says, it's going to be a little trivia question for you.
Okay.
Where... How many birds are killed? 1 million birds are killed every day, every week, or every year. Do your homework, and we'll tell you in a little bit.
Hi, who is this?
This is Casey.
Hey, Casey, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Where are you now?
Dallas, Texas.
Dallas, Texas. Okay, you are on with Dr. Debbie.
Hello,
well,
Dr.
Hi, Casey.
I've got a 7-year-old blue heeler German Shepherd mix, and about a week ago, she developed a bald spot on her right rear hip. She scratched at it for a day or so, and it's not a bald spot. She's not been scratching at it any longer, but it's still just bald as it could be. And it's, we're about a week, maybe a week and a half down the road now. It doesn't seem to be improving or getting worse.
And so she was pretty bothered by it originally, though?
In fact, when I first noticed it, you know, a lot of dogs, you can scratch them on the belly and such, and they'll kick their legs.
Uh-huh.
She's never been one to do that. And she did there for just a couple of days, right when I noticed that bald spot, and her skin is kind of crawl when you kind of, you know, pet her across her back.
Uh-huh.
And all that stopped within just a couple of days, but the bald spot's still there.
Has Casey ever had any kind of skin problems in the past that you can ever recall?
No, she never has.
Never has. All right. Well, that scratch reflex that you're describing, and we look for that a lot of times with dogs as a sign that they're having intense itching, and that can definitely be from a lot of different things, whether we're talking about an allergy or an infection. And I guess I'd have one more question for you kind of before we go any further. Is, has Casey had any kind of vaccinations recently, any kind of shots of any sort?
No, she hasn't. Had a rabies shot about 3 months ago.
Okay, 3 months ago. The reason I ask that is just there is an occasional situation where a pet can have a little bald spot that develops at the site of the rabies shot or some other vaccines. It can happen with other injections as well, but sometimes we'll see that on the right leg because a lot of veterinarians give the rabies shot in that area. So that's a possibility, but gosh, I just don't think that would really make Casey very itchy or scratchy. And you're calling from Texas, but do you travel to other states as well?
Yeah, we drive a truck. She gets to go all over the country, so naturally she's exposed to a lot of different things.
Uh-huh, yeah. And that's the other thing is that, you know, you're going through so many different states, and in Texas there's a lot of problems with fleas and a lot of potentials for parasites, so things such even as ticks, and those can definitely cause some problems where we can see itching and scratching. The other potentials, we could have even like a hot spot. And have you ever heard of that before?
Yeah, I've heard of it.
Hotspots are kind of interesting things, and it's kind of a layman's term, and, you know, it's mostly, we describe it saying that it's like it's a hot area, you know, it's hot with inflammation or infection, and sometimes that truly is the case. With a hotspot, we can actually see that from an infection or an allergy that starts it off, and it's an area where the pet is very scratchy, very itchy. We'll even see some moist crusting in the area, so, you know, if you kind of look at it, it's like a big scabby area, and the hair might even come out of that area very easily with just mild plucking. So that might be something. And if that's the case, we really need to get Casey on some antibiotics, see about getting that area cleaned up, you know, maybe some medicated shampoos. So I don't know if you have that ability. Is Casey pretty much up for any kind of bathing, any kind of topical things? Have you ever had to try that before?
No, you know, she's never really had any sort of issues whatsoever. But I don't know. I guess my question was, is this something you'd recommend I'd go ahead and take her into a veterinarian for?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think this is, you know, especially since you described that it was bothering her so bad, anything that starts off that way, you know, when our pets start telling us and having such a drastic change in their behavior and, you know, focusing on that area, then I'd say, yeah, definitely there's something there we need to address. And hopefully it's just something where we can try with antibiotics or anti-itching, allergy medicines. There's so many things that we have out there. So I would say that definitely that would be the first step. And from there, I would you know, definitely look to see if there's anything parasite-wise. And I'm assuming with Casey, you're traveling. Is she on heartworm prevention and flea and tick prevention?
She's not really on anything. I don't know. I thought it might have been a somewhere she got too much protein or something. A lot of times we're at home, she gets to eat what I eat rather than dog food. She'll eat a lot of steak.
Oh, no, I don't want to hear about that. That's like ringing in veterinary ears right now. But actually,
really?
You did say one. You said one thing when you said she's not really on any heartworm prevention. I've got to stop you there, and I'm going to be a crusader for Casey's health right now. And I think you really need to see about getting her on some prevention. So go get that skin thing looked at. But heartworm disease is carried by mosquitoes. Pretty much every state has it, and all it takes is one bite of a mosquito to pass that. So I would definitely encourage you. I know you called about the skin thing, but I'm going to put my commercial in for her and to make sure we keep her healthy and protected.
That's what we're going to do. I thank you so much.
Thanks. Drive carefully. We appreciate your call.
Thank you.
Well, don't forget, you can get your fix of Animal Radio anytime you want with the Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android. Download it now. It's made possible by Fear Free Happy Homes.
helping your pets live their happiest, healthiest, fullest lives at home, at the vet, and everywhere in between. Visit them at fearfreehappyhomes.com. And thanks, Fear Free, for underwriting Animal Radio.
Do you have Medicare and do you use a CPAP machine? This is a national healthcare alert regarding your CPAP supplies. Using a clean CPAP mask and clean supplies is important to staying healthy. The best way to make sure your CPAP equipment is clean is to get new supplies. If you have Medicare, we have great news. Medicare will pay for you to have new clean supplies every 90 days. We'll even do all the paperwork for you to make sure that there's little to no out-of-pocket cost to you. And you don't even have to leave your home. We provide free in-home delivery. So if you're a CPAP user and you have Medicare, staying healthy with new CPAP equipment is easy. Just make this free phone call right now to get started.
Sponsored by Specialty Medical. 800-485-4409. 800-485-4409. 800-485-4409. That's 800-485-4409.
Hello, I'm David Bellamy, the Bellamy Brothers, and we're on Animal Radio. Love your animals.
Check out Animal Radio highlights, all the good stuff without the blah, blah, blah. Browse on over to animalradio.pet.
This is an Animal Radio news update.
I'm Lori Brooks. An Arizona state lawmaker has introduced a bill there that will fine people up to $250 if they're caught trying to pass their pets off as service animals in public places. According to an attorney with the Arizona Center for Disability Law, current federal law says business owners are only allowed to ask people with service animals two questions. Those questions are, number one, is your animal a service animal that is required for your disability? They're not allowed to ask what the disability is. The second question they can ask is, what task or work has your service animal been trained to do? Now, those are the two questions that may be asked, but those business owners may not ask people for proof that their pet or animal is, in fact, a certified service animal. Business owners are also not allowed to force or request pet owners to demonstrate the skill that their pet is trained or supposedly trained to do, but they are allowed to ask people to leave if a service animal is behaving as a service animal should not behave, like in a threatening way, going to the bathroom inside the establishment or causing an unnecessary distraction for other patrons, which you really wouldn't see, or I've never seen anyway, a real service animal do. Well, I have seen this statistic before, and it is so incredible that experts are now doing some more research to see how they can change this. In Australia, it's estimated that cats kill more than 1 million birds every single day. Wow. Every day. Hmm. Yeah. In one research project, scientists did a review of about 100 previous studies that were conducted all across the continent. They found that 316 million birds are killed by feral cats every year in Australia, and another 61 million birds are killed by pet cats. And the really scary part of those numbers is that more than 300 species of birds are impacted, and 71 of those bird species are their existence is already threatened. So it's kind of dangerous, a little precarious. And an interesting note from this study, it's not usually the very small birds that are the targets of wildcats. They say the medium-sized birds are most likely to be killed by wildcats. The fires last year in California that happened late in the year affected a lot of people and pets, and brought out some heroes, too. A group of young men were scouring a neighborhood, and they found something shocking in the scorched remains of this neighborhood. It was a whole bathtub full of these just regular common goldfish. Now, somehow, the fish had survived the fire in this bathtub that was made out to be a garden pond. It was in somebody's former backyard. That fire had wiped out many homes in the neighborhood, but luckily the fish were rescued about 3 weeks after the fire. The 21-year-old student rescuer has now set up an aquarium for them in his father's home, and his mother is also helping out by posting signs of her son rescuing the fish around the burned out neighborhood. I'm Lori Brooks. Get more breaking animal news anytime at animalradio.com.
This has been an Animal Radio News Update. Get more at animalradio.com.
Hi, this is Jamie Farr, and you're listening to the Animal Radio Network. And remember to spay and neuter your pets.
You're listening to Animal Radio. If you missed any part of today's show, visit us at animalradio.com or download the Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android.
It is Animal Radio, celebrating the connection with our pets. We will go back to the phones in just a couple of minutes. But first, we're going to visit with an old friend. Shannon Kopp is joining us. And you might remember, we spoke to her, I believe it was 2016, perhaps, a couple of years ago. And she at the time, well, prior to that time, she was bulimic. She would throw up a lot. How many times a day would you throw up?
At my worst, it was about 20 times a day.
Holy moly. Okay. You were... Yeah. That's really a disorder that could cause death, a fatal disorder. I mean, that's...
Yeah.
You tried doctors, you tried therapy, really nothing worked for you until you met a dog down... What shelter was that at?
The San Diego Humane Society.
And what happened at that point in time in your life that changed that?
Well, I got a job working with the shelter dogs there. I was their marketing coordinator. So essentially my job was to get to know the homeless dogs that were there. Lots of pit bulls, chihuahuas, and mixes, but some purebreds too, and some labs. To take them on local news stations, radio stations, to take them to fairs, and just introduce them to the world. So my job was essentially to spend 8 hours a day with these loving shelter dogs. And I got that job right out of treatment. I had been hospitalized. I went to rehab. This was my eighth year with bulimia. I was really beginning to think I was a hopeless case. And I continued to work with a therapist, and normally her recommendations were nothing I could ever follow through with in the moment. It's a hard thing to explain, but the urges to binge and to purge were so strong that, you know, I could never do any other coping mechanism than that. And one day I was binging in the break room on a bunch of sweets volunteers had made, and I heard my therapist's voice say, "Can you commit to going to see a shelter dog?" And it was the first time ever in 8 years a thought like that interrupted my binge. And I walked out of that break room, and to the right was the bathroom, and to the left were the dog kennels, and I went right to the dog kennels. And I sat with this big dog named Paloma. We had nicknamed her Kim K because she had a really big butt, and she had been hit by a car. She had been hit by a car, and she was doing great, but one of her back legs was shorter than the other, so she had this adorable little strut when she walked. She was a big, white, loving pit bull, and I went into that kennel feeling horrible and full and uncomfortable and hopeless, and that dog, completely unaware of her size, sat on my lap for 30 minutes, grounded me. I held on to her. I stroked her fur. I looked into her eyes. I let her kiss and slobber all over me. And I did not get up and leave that kennel until I was confident I wasn't going to purge. And that was the beginning of my recovery. And I learned to begin turning to these animals who would never judge me, who would never give me a lecture, who had no expectations, who did not care what I did the night before. They just loved me, and they were so happy to see me, and I couldn't believe that, you know, because at that point I was so convinced I was unlovable. And these animals accepted me in the most profound way. So I really began turning to them when I was having these urges, and it worked. And it's been 8 years now, full recovery from bulimia.
That is great.
And I continue to work with shelter dogs, and I have my own rescue dog, of course, who's sitting at my side, and she continues to help me.
Who is that with you?
That's Bella. Yes.
So now what have you been up to since we last spoke? Because I know it's a lot.
Yes, I. Well, my book came out, and that was such an incredible experience. I've connected with people all over the world about the healing power of the paw. I founded a nonprofit called Soul Paws Recovery Project, and essentially we offer free animal-assisted therapy to people impacted by eating disorders in San Diego. So every month we have either miniature horses, dogs, puppies, rabbits, guinea pigs, and rats. Sometimes we combine the dogs and the horses, and we combine the different small animals, and we provide an hour workshop to anyone that's struggling with food and body issues. And, you know, especially in this new year when we're kind of bombarded by all these messages about changing our body and changing ourselves and becoming a new, improved version of us, you know, the message at Soul Paws is animals love us just as we are. We are perfect just as we are. And we do different exercises with these animals that have had a really profound impact on people of all ages. One woman came to us in her 50s and said she'd never asked for help for her eating disorder before, but the idea of coming to a room filled with therapy dogs was a lot easier than going into a therapist's office.
Wow.
So sometimes it's easier to start there, to start with the animals, telling our truth, practicing truth-telling, getting rid of the shame, and then we can build up to speaking perhaps with a therapist or maybe even going to treatment, perhaps a treatment center that incorporates animal-assisted therapy. So it's been an incredible journey. We're looking to expand Soul Paws. We also offer online workshops, so you can learn about those at Soul Paws Recovery Project or soulpawsrecovery.org. That's S-O-U-L recovery.org. And then the last thing I've been up to is I've joined forces with Eating Recovery Center. We have treatment centers all across the country treating anorexia, bulimia, and binge eating disorder. And I've been sharing my message of hope and recovery, and obviously talking a lot about the healing power of the paw, because that's a big part of my story.
It's an incredible... Shannon,
this is Dr. Debbie here.
You know what? Hold on, Dr. Debbie. I'm going to take a quick break here. We got to pay some bills, and then you're up, okay? How's that sound? Stick around. We are with Shannon Kopp. It is Animal Radio.
You're listening to Animal Radio. If you missed any part of today's show, visit us at animalradio.com or download the Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android.
Hello, this is Loretta Swit, and I'm on Animal Radio. And please don't forget, spay and neuter.
The old way of living with diabetes is a pain. You've got to remember to do your testing and always need to stick your fingers to test your blood sugar. The new way to live your life with diabetes is with a continuous glucose monitor. Apply a discrete sensor on your body and it continuously monitors your glucose levels, helping you spend more time in range and freeing you from painful finger sticks. If you are living with type 1 or type 2 diabetes and you administer insulin 3 or more times per day or use an insulin pump, you might be eligible for a CGM through your insurance benefits. U.S. Med partners with over 500 private insurance companies and Medicare. We offer free shipping, 90-day supplies, and we bill your insurance. Call us today for a free benefits check.
800-785-1673. 800-785-1673. 800-785-1673. That's 800-785-1673.
You're listening to Animal Radio. If you missed any part of today's show, visit us at animalradio.com or download the Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android.
It is Animal Radio, and we are with Shannon Kopp, a truly inspirational story. She suffered from bulimia and an eating disorder, a really fatal eating disorder, and she couldn't find any way to cure herself except until she ran into a dog that she met at a shelter. And that changed her life. She realized that animals are great therapy, and they can really help you with these kinds of things. And she's created her own 501c3 to help others with food disorders. I guess that, is that what they call it? Food disorders or eating disorders, right?
Eating disorders. But, you know, sometimes it took me a long time to even admit I had an eating disorder. So we just say food and body issues. If you're struggling with accepting your body, if your mind is really focused, obsessed, stressing out over food, then Soul Paws is a good place for you.
Before the break, Dr. Debbie, you had a question, and I cut you off so rudely. I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, that's okay. I wondered, Shannon, how many of the people that you help with Soul Paws already have pets of their own, or is it something different about these being shelter animals?
Well, it's a combination of shelter and rescue animals and then therapy animals. So not all of them come from the shelter. All the small animals do. And a lot of the, you know, some of the people that come are coming actually from treatment centers. So they are being hospitalized or are in a treatment center currently. And sometimes this can be for a long time. It can be for weeks, months, I've even heard years. And so they're away from their family pets. They're away from those animals that they love so much. And this is really important and special for them. Some people are just in the situation that I was in. You know, the first year I worked at the Humane Society, I think I was the only person there that did not have a pet. And that was simply not because I wasn't dying to have one, but I could barely take care of myself. So I did not want to put another life at risk. Mine was already at risk. So some people that come to Soul Paws are, it's a part of their treatment process in addition to outpatient therapy and treatment. And so they're not in a place yet where they can adopt a dog of their own. So they come to Soul Paws for that healing and companionship. And then, of course, there are those that have animals at home. And what they can do at Soul Paws is learn practices. We do different meditation practices. We do different therapeutic exercises that they can then take home with them and practice with their pets at home.
Aside from yourself, do you have any other success stories? Is there anybody that really comes to mind?
Someone I met when she was in treatment, she told me she was she struggled with bulimia and also exercise addiction. And then she also struggled with substance use. She told me that she was thinking about leaving treatment. She was in her early 30s and had just checked in when the resident therapy dog there climbed into her lap and convinced her to stay. And she stayed in treatment, completed her treatment, made incredible progress. And then when she was discharged, she was really frightened. She was terrified that she was going to relapse without that structure and support. So she adopted a dog of her own, started coming to Soul Paws, and I can tell you that today she's been coming for a year. She's recently signed on as a board member with Soul Paws.
Oh, great.
She is doing great in her recovery. She's actually going to school now, and her life has transformed, and she claims that Soul Paws is a really important part of that. We also have a woman who struggled with binge eating disorder, went to treatment for that, and says that she feels there's not a place in the world she feels safer than when she's at Soul Paws with the animals and with other people who really understand what she's going through. So lots of different stories, and I'm just so excited to be a part of it. I'm so excited to share what I discovered at the Humane Society with others to watch animals do their magic, which is really love, you know, the way they love us, the way they make us feel.
It's so unconditional.
It is unconditional. And I think when you're dealing with eating disorders, there's so much shame. There's so much self-talk and, you know, thoughts, compulsive, obsessive thinking, that it's really, really a healing experience to be with an animal that will not trigger your shame. Even people, the most loving, supportive people, my therapist, I struggled to be honest with about my eating disorder. I would have never, I never admitted to her, as great as she was, and we worked together for 10 years. When I was struggling throwing up 20 times a day, I never told her that. I was so ashamed, but I could tell a dog that. And that was kind of the bridge for me. And eventually I would tell my therapist, but the shame was almost palpable. It was something that really prevented my recovery. And so it makes sense to me that animals who are going to love us no matter what, particularly therapy animals, and then these shelter dogs that are just desperate for love, it's a really powerful thing.
Absolutely. I wish we had more time. I always have so much fun talking with you. We'll have to do it again. I'm sure you'll be up to some amazing things in this brand new year, and we will stay in touch, okay? What's the website one more time, Shannon?
Soul Paws Recovery, and that's SOULPAWS recovery.org.
Dogs or cats, horse or emu, animals are people too.
Waterbeds were a big hit in the 70s, but lately they're a big hit with cows. Dairy farmer Kirk Christie says his cows give milk while resting on waterbeds and watching a flat screen TV. He says the specially made cow waterbeds were a big hit with his cows from the beginning. They provide heat in the winter and cool them in the summer depending on the water he pipes in. Happy cows produce more milk, and since the waterbeds, milk production has jumped up 20%. Christie installed the TV because he said the cows were so used to just hearing his voice that when visitors came by, they'd get scared. Now they get a chance to meet new people on TV, and according to Christie, they like Oprah and Dr. Phil. I'm Britt Savage for Animal Radio.
Animals are people too. Animal Radio.
Do you have Medicare and do you use a CPAP machine? This is a national healthcare alert regarding your CPAP supplies. Using a clean CPAP mask and clean supplies is important to staying healthy. The best way to make sure your CPAP equipment is clean is to get new supplies. If you have Medicare, we have great news. Medicare will pay for you to have new clean supplies every 90 days. We'll even do all the paperwork for you to make sure that there's little to no out-of-pocket cost to you. And you don't even have to leave your home. We provide free in-home delivery. So if you're a CPAP user and you have Medicare, staying healthy with new CPAP equipment is easy. Just make this free phone call right now to get started.
Sponsored by Specialty Medical. 800-485-4409. 800-485-4409. 800-485-4409. That's 800-485-4409.
Celebrating the connection with our pets. This is Animal Radio, featuring your dream team, veterinarian Dr. Debbie White and groomer Joey Villani. And here are your hosts, Hal Abrams and Judy Francis.
She is perhaps the smartest woman I know. I'm talking about Dr. Debbie. You want to talk to her? You have a question about your animal? She teaches me so much. Last hour, I learned, yes, there's a difference between a possum and possum. One spelled with an O, one spelled with a P. I just thought that perhaps the possum was just missing the O. Somebody maybe spelled it incorrectly.
You know, I always thought it was, isn't it a spelling thing?
It isn't. There's two different kinds of animals. Are they both marsupials?
They are both marsupials, but totally different ranges of where they live, and their physical appearances are very different. But, you know, a lot of people, I think, we talk about possums, you know.
Yeah.
At least in, you know, Indiana, we talk about possums. Southern Indiana. I'm from up north, so I actually don't have that accent. So
I blame the Beverly Hillbillies because they always talk about possum pie.
Yes, they do.
And it should have been opossum pie, right?
Correct. It's yes. See, sentence. You're correcting yeah. them.
Mm-hmm. Thanks to you.
The reason we're bringing up the opossums is because there's an opossum rescue. Oh, Judy has just Googled pictures of possums.
That's a possum. That's a possum. That's an Australian possum. That's different from our opossum. Here,
hold it up to the microphone so listeners can see.
They're kind of cute.
They are,
you know, they've
yeah.
got that little short face. They kind of look like almost a gizmo, like a little gremlin or something.
Yeah,
and they got
they
this
are.
Bushy tail.
Yeah, yeah. Do people have pets like that?
They do see, we see some opossums come through my office that people have them as pets. And I think a lot of people get them when they're little newborns. And then if you bottle feed them, they tend to be a better pet than, you know, just catching an adult in the wild and trying to make them a pet. That, I will tell you, is not something I would advise for the tame at heart. But, you know, when you get them young, they tame to you and they can be raised and live with people. But it's not for everybody. And we certainly, you know, they're wild animals. So you want to keep that in mind before you bring one into your home.
I have so many questions for this lady. And that's coming up this hour in just a few minutes. But first, your calls. Which one, Judy? Two.
Line two.
We have, is it Lois? Hey, Lois.
Hi, how are you today?
Good. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I have
found you.
Huh? You just found us?
Yeah.
Where have you been? I missed you. I was going, where is Lois? Lois, I want you to meet Dr. Debbie.
Hey there.
She's our veterinarian. She'll answer your vet medical questions.
So what do you have going on, Lois?
Okay, I have two Maltesers. One, someone gave her to me, said, please take my baby. I just can't, you know, handle her. Well, I took her, and she has this problem where she licks her feet. She licks and she licks. She wakes me up at night. She licks. She's got my other Maltese licking. I've been to the vet. They gave her, well, they told me to get Benadryl. That worked when it rose off. Then, of course, you know, it's back again. Then I went back to the vet, and they gave her some steroids, which I didn't like, but we tried it. Didn't have any, you know, I bought some expensive tubes of supposed to make her not lick. And she licks. You can hold her and love on her, and as you're doing it, she licks.
Oh. So you said the other dog is now doing this behavior as well?
The other dog is now doing it, yes, ma'am. And that's what I had since 2 or 4 months old.
Oh, okay. Now, on the foot area, do you see any areas where there's lost hair or there's sores or red spots?
No, but I did go to the groomer. They used to go once a month. And they had that real long hair to the floor, but I had the groomer cut it all off. They gave her, they gave both of them a poodle puppy feet cut.
When,
you
okay,
know,
sure.
There's no, you know, shaving. They're all shaved off except for the ears and their tail. And they just lick. So my friend says, we'll just follow them out. Just poke them a little, like a mother dog would, and go, eh. So I did that. And it worked, but I'm not always there to do that. And
well, sure, you got to sleep at night, right, Lois? Oh, geez. Well, you know, the number one thing that causes dogs to lick their feet is allergies, the whole category of allergies in some form, whether they're inhalant allergies or food-related allergies. And if we saw some improvement with Benadryl, you know, maybe it's, you know, an allergy kind of playing role. But you said the prednisone, the steroid, nothing happened with that and nothing got better?
The Benadryl slowed it down. So as it wore off, they started licking. And I don't want to keep them, you know, doped up.
Yeah, and you know, if a pet isn't responding with an itching or a licking behavior when we're giving a steroid, to me it says, let's stop our direction because, you know, generally that works pretty nicely for most types of allergies. It doesn't work super for food-related allergies. So my number one thing I'd say is, in that category, is, you know, I'd get these kids on a hypoallergenic diet, something that's prescribed by your veterinarian preferably so they can guide you through those steps and find something, stick with that for about 4 to 6 weeks and see if the foot licking decreases. If not, we may try another diet. But that's one thing that we can try from the source and try more directly to control some of this itching. The other things to think about, when I have a dog that's itching and licking and I have multiple dogs in the house all doing the same behavior, I got to think about something infectious. And, you know, not to scare you or freak you out, but there are some types of infections that dogs can have that can mimic normal things like allergies that we kind of blame for just about every skin condition out there. And it's natural. We just want to, you know, kind of say, oh, he's just got allergies. That's why he licks that hole in his side or chews his feet or always has sores on his belly. That's a common thing. But we can see microscopic parasites or mites that can be present in sometimes just select areas of a pet's body. It doesn't always have to be generalized like fleas or ticks. The other thing is we can run into fungal infections, kind of like ringworm. And the foot area is not uncommon to either mites or fungal infections. So that for me would be, you know, I love CSI. I love kind of getting to the nitty-gritty of finding out why these things happen and not just trying to throw medicine at animals that we don't really need to. So my recommendation would be have your vet take a couple samples, have them check for mites, have them check for a ringworm by a test method, and try to rule that out as a possibility. But many pets, I will actually go on forward. If we've got multiple doggies in the house, I'll treat them for mites for a couple months and see if we're seeing any improvement in that foot licking and chewing. Because honestly, I can't tell you how many pets that I've seen come in year after year. Oh, I need medicine for the allergies. And then one time I finally get my samples and I finally get to do some tests and I say, wow, how do you feel about your dog having mites in their feet or in their back all this time? And we've been using the wrong approach. So definitely I'd say, you know, that would be one important step for you there. And, you know, there are some doggies that foot licking, it can be a behavioral problem. So almost like an OCD issue. Before I blame that as a possible thing for your babies, you know, I'd want to make sure we check out these medical things and see if we can try some other remedies. Because, yeah, there's a lot more we can do for your babies there. And little Maltese's, I bet their little feet are probably kind of stained red or even brown if they're licking them a lot, huh?
Yes, a rusty looking, especially on the one that was given to me. The other one, she doesn't do it that much, but when she sees the one do it, then she starts to do it. If I'm home, I say no, you know. She still starts to look at me, glare at me.
Oh, yeah, but, you know, these white dogs, typically this brown staining, it almost looks like rust on their fur. It's from a pigment that is found in dog saliva and in their tears. So it's not blood necessarily, things like that. But, yeah, that very kind of red-brown staining is just a sign. It's a veterinary sign. We look around. If I see that, I usually can tell, ah, your baby's been licking, huh?
And she also, if you go to pet her, she'll lick your hand as she's coming to you.
Oh, okay, yeah. She might have a little bit of some doggy OCD there for that explanation. So, oh gosh, there's so many things we can try for your baby, and I think that's might be the key here is we need to kind of start some other remedies, do a little diagnostic test, and make sure we head down the right path here, because we could have a lot of different options here for your baby and what might be the right answer. So I hope that's not too much info to throw at you there, Lois, but we can do some things and give your babies a little scratch on the head and a little a lick on the ear if they like that, or if you want to do that, you're not grossed out. This is Dr. Debbie. We are waiting for your call.
Well, this portion of Animal Radio is underwritten by Kensington Books. If you love stories about finding strength through the wisdom of dogs, look no further than A Reason for Hope by award-winning author Kristen von Kreisler. It's a beautifully uplifting story about a courthouse dog named Hope, who's trained to comfort victims throughout the legal process. A Reason for Hope is now available everywhere books are sold. And if you need more information, you can visit them over at kensingtonbooks.com. Thanks, Kensington, for underwriting Animal Radio.
It's Alan Kibble. You know I love dogs. They constantly make us look at ourselves. This is the best frisbee-catching dog on four legs.
She's awesome.
And this is the best frisbee-catching dog on three legs. Her name is Macy.
Fell in love with her the minute I saw her. She was my perfect dog.
She's the only freestyle frisbee-catching dog on three legs. She had an accident, and that right front leg had to go.
It was heartbreaking for me. She was my perfect dog, and I thought, oh my gosh, she's not going to be perfect anymore.
Macy, the dog, doesn't think about being different than she was before.
She has taught me so much. She's just taught me acceptance and humility. You know, she sets no limits on herself.
Maybe Macy will never be the best frisbee-catching dog in the world.
No, she's not going to win. She's not going to place. But it's not about winning or placing. It's about the adventure of life.
That's one of the amazing things about dogs. Macy doesn't think about being different from other dogs. She just thinks about getting that frisbee. Now, what are most people always doing?
I always wonder what's going on in his head.
Trying to figure out what's in their dog's head.
Like when she runs out of the front door and just starts chasing after people.
Dogs get really interested in people that are afraid of them. It brings out their prey instinct. They get excited and they want to chase you.
And she doesn't hear me saying, come back, Roro, no.
Oh, she hears you all right. She thinks you're joining in, and she doesn't respect you as her leader. If something's more interesting than you are, the dog's going to go for it, unless the dog respects you. And respect has to be earned by giving a dog boundaries, limitations, structure.
Stuff like that, or like when she eats my shoes.
You haven't taught her what she can't chew and what she can't. Here's what most people do.
You are so sweet.
Tons of affection for a dog without having to make them earn it. They're questions that have been around for as long as dog owners have gotten dogs and not educated themselves about dog behavior first.
Why he might chew a bedpost or why he might eat your socks. The reasons behind these things, which I wish I knew the answers to.
You should know the answers to him because he thinks you're playing a game when you chase after him and because you haven't taught him what he can chew and what he can't. Get more tips at animalradio.com.
Award-winning author Kristen von Kreisler is known for her novels about dogs and how they bring out the best in humans. Her newest, A Reason for Hope, is an uplifting story of resilience, redemption, and a special yellow lab named Hope, a courthouse dog who's trained to comfort victims and witnesses. When a woman's life is upended by trauma, Hope gives her the courage to seek justice. A Reason for Hope by Kristen von Kreisler is available everywhere books are sold. For more info, visit kensingtonbooks.com.
You're listening to Animal Radio. Call the Dream Team now with the free Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android.
It is so easy to reach out to Dr. Debbie or Joey Villani. Download the Animal Radio app for iPhone, Android, and BlackBerry and ask your questions directly from the app. And we'll go back to the phones in just a couple of seconds. Coming up in, about 20 minutes or so, we're going to talk to Beth Sparks. And she runs a possum, as I learned earlier, different than possum, a possum rescue. She rescues opossums. Go figure. I have so many questions. I hope we have enough time. Also on the way in just a few minutes, Lori Brooks from the Animal Radio Newsroom. What do we have going on today?
Hey, we got the ball rolling. We've been talking so long about, you know, dogs being, or pets altogether, being considered property, right, under the eyes of the law. Uh-huh. Now we have two states, one just added the beginning of this year, where a judge will now decide custody for pet parents.
Really?
Really? Yeah, so two states out of 50, we're on a roll.
Okay, boy. Well, that's on the way in just a few minutes. I'm looking forward to that news story, but I'm really looking forward to talking to you first. Let's see. Let's head to John. Hey, John, how are you doing?
Hi, this is John.
So what do you got going on?
Well, I got a little puppy, 6 months old, and she's a miniature poodle, and she's sweet as can be. We're worried about feeding her ice cream. We don't know anything about that sort of thing.
Okay, you're worried about it? Is she currently eating ice cream?
Yeah, we feed her a dollop once in a while. Vanilla.
Okay. So you're looking to ask me for permission to give your dog ice cream. Is that right?
Will it hurt her?
Well, it depends. There are certainly dogs that have very sensitive stomachs, and veering from their regular diet can upset their system. The interesting thing that people need to recognize is that dogs and cats, a good majority of them, are actually lactose intolerant. So that's something to think about when we start offering them different dairy products, that can cause some dietary upset. And it may not be a life-threatening illness, but, you know, we might talk about excess gas, soft stools, maybe some vomiting. As a child, I can tell you my dog, he definitely dined on cleaning the ice cream bowl on a regular occurrence. So a little bit probably is not going to be a big deal. But in general, there's a lot of fat in ice cream and calories that we really just don't need to do. So I'm not going to give you that clearance to say it's okay to give ice cream. It would just be something I would try to discourage.
That's interesting. The local young man at a pet store suggested I put some peanut butter in wet dog food and freeze it and then give them that.
Well, that can be kind of a fun treat, but I would say rather than put it in the food, frozen peanut butter can be very useful when we're trying to get dogs to be occupied, chew on toys. So you can take a little bit of peanut butter, stick it inside a Kong or another kind of chewing toy, and keep them occupied. I don't want to just give dogs food. That really, it's pretty ungratifying. I mean, yes, they like to eat it and it's yummy, but it doesn't really occupy their mind or their chewing instincts. So I like the frozen peanut butter in a toy. I don't like throwing it in the bowl. That's just, it's not letting a dog be a dog.
Okay, thank you. Two last questions. I just got told yesterday that it's bad to feed, dangerous to feed a dog grapes.
I didn't quite catch that.
Dangerous to feed dog grapes.
Grapes.
Yes, that's actually true. Grapes and raisins have the potential to cause kidney failure in dogs. And it's very true. And that's another thing where people will say, I've done it before and my dog is perfectly fine. It's something they are looking at. They don't know really what the toxic principle is, but it can happen. So do not feed grapes or raisins to your dogs.
Thank you, Debbie. And what about chocolate?
Chocolate. Oh, that's another one. Chocolate's a no-no. And small amounts aren't likely to be toxic, but you can certainly get a taste. They'll develop a taste for chocolate. And my own dear Labrador had ingested several pounds of chocolate items and had the world's worst chocolate toxicity. He had heart arrhythmias, vomiting. It was a really bad state. So it can be toxic in large amounts. So I don't like to do it at all.
Okay, we don't do that. We just feed your vanilla. Little scoop of vanilla, tiny little tablespoonful.
Yeah, and there's so many, you know, fun, kind of healthy dog treats out there that can be flavored like chocolate, but they really don't contain chocolate. So if you feel the urge to give something like that, you can always reach to the pet store to find something.
Thank you, Debbie.
We have a list over at the website at animalradio.com of foods you should not feed your dog, which includes, of course, grapes and raisins. Thank you for listening, John. I appreciate your call today.
Thank you. I enjoyed it very much. Thank you very much.
1-866-405-8405 to connect with our dream team here at Animal Radio.
Hi, it's Alan Cable with another dog tip.
My blind dog makes more money than I do.
That's Dee Dee Murray. She's a painter, and so is her dog, Hallie.
She can't even see.
I thought I had a pretty good year, but she made more money than I did last year.
Hallie's a long-haired dachshund that Dee Dee adopted about 11 years ago, and the dog recently went blind. Hallie paints and has saved lots of dogs with the money she's made off the sale of those paintings.
It's a little hard on the ego, but I'm so proud of her, it doesn't matter.
She's an amazing talent. Because of Hallie, we've saved lives.
Hallie, paint. Good girl. That's good.
We're always talking about getting your dog to behave the way you want with positive motivation, setting your dog up for success, and taking baby steps when you try to teach your dog to do something or behave a certain way. And Dee Dee's a master of knowing how to do that.
She paints faster the better the treat is. That's it. Go ahead and paint. There you go. Good girl.
Hallie's 13 years old, and Dee Dee sure knows how to get her best work.
She tends to paint in the same area.
All the money from the sale of Hallie's paintings goes to a nonprofit that helps abandon and abuse dogs.
Every dime.
Yes, yes. Oh, yes, don't get me going. But yes, very proud, yeah.
Pretty impressive stuff when you find out that Hallie the dog is blind and nearly deaf as well. And it just goes to show, with calm leadership, positive reinforcement, and patience, you can teach a dog to do amazing things.
She can't even see. It's just amazing.
Dee Dee knows Hallie's days are numbered, but if you give a dog what they need, they'll pay it back 10 times.
She is my life. You know, I do everything with her.
It took a few months for Dee Dee to train Hallie to paint, and you have to take it step by step and slow. But look at the rewards you get when you spend time with your dog. Because let's face it, all they want to do is please you.
Yeah.
Get more tips at animalradio.com.
Hi, this is Ed Begley Jr. on Animal Radio. Live simply so that others may simply live.
All of us here at Fido Friendly Magazine can't wait to get on the road again with our favorite Fido. We know that it's just not a vacation without our furry companions by our side. Start daydreaming now and visit FidoFriendly.com to scout out places near and far so you will be ready for your next adventure once it's safe to travel. That's FidoFriendly.com. Until then, stay safe and leave no dog behind.
Hi, I'm Charlotte Ross on Animal Radio. Please remember to spay and neuter your pets.
This is an Animal Radio News Update.
I'm Lori Brooks. Divorcing couples in Illinois who cannot agree on who gets to keep the pets will now be able to have a judge decide custody thanks to a new state law there. Usually companion animals, if you've never been through this before, are treated like property to be divvied up between the couple because in most states, pets are classified as property, much like furniture and appliances and the like. But with the rise of two-income families who are opting not to have children, the issue of pet custody is becoming much more common because people are couples anyway. A lot of times you're having pets instead of children. So under the new Illinois law, which went into effect on the first of the year, judges in the state will now have clear guidance when they have to decide whether to award sole custody to just one of the pet parents, or maybe they will rule that they must share custody of the pets. Factors they say will include things like who takes care of the pet on a day-to-day basis and who spends all the money on things like food and health care for the pet. But this is not all that new because last year it was Alaska that became the first state in the country in which judges added pet custody to their dockets. My pet will be going to training, so at least I'll get credit for that if I ever get a divorce.
Is that Tater in the background there?
That's Tater. He has a bone he wants me to throw. It's not a bone. It's a toy bone.
Well, then you better hurry
lovely,
up and get
isn't
to the news.
He?
Yes.
Denver has become the first city in Colorado now to ban elective cat declawing. The city has decided it will now prohibit veterinarians from performing the procedure unless it's medically necessary. And that makes Denver the first major U.S. city outside of California, that is, to make this move since they passed it in November. However, the Colorado Veterinary Medical Association opposes that new law. It's not like it sounds, though. The association says the decision to declaw a cat or not should be left up to a veterinarian and the pet owner. But like many vets around the country, most veterinarians these days simply just don't offer the surgery any longer. And a nonprofit group called Fences for Fido has built an off-leash dog park for pets who belong to homeless women. Volunteers were there to put up the fencing recently at a church up in Washington State. The church runs its own safe parking program. And this program allows 40 to 50 women and their families to stay in their cars in the church parking lot because they're homeless. So a lot of times, that car is a safer place for them to be. The Portland-based Fences for Fido says it was really important for them to step up to help the women be able to keep their pets, since the church was already allowing them to use their parking lot, their kitchen, and Wi-Fi service. So, a great new program. I'm Lori Brooks. Get more breaking animal news anytime at animalradio.com.
This has been an Animal Radio News Update. Get more at animalradio.com.
Hi, this is Justin Silver from CBS's Dogs in the City here on Animal Radio, just reminding you to always stay and neuter your pets.
You're listening to Animal Radio. If you missed any part of today's show, visit us at animalradio.com or download the Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android.
It is Animal Radio, and I still learn something every week, something new that I didn't know about animals. This week, I learned that there's a difference between a possum and opossum.
They're, I didn't know that
apparently,
either.
Apparently two different animals, according to Dr. Debbie.
Yes, so, they're both marsupials, but from different places, yeah.
I just thought one was, if you spelled it wrong.
Yeah, or you pronounced it wrong.
Yeah. So, incredible. We're going to learn a little more about the opossum right now. We have on the phone with us Beth Sparks. She heads up the Opossum's Pouch Rescue. This is an opossum rescue. I didn't really know that was necessary, but we're gonna find out about it right now. Hi, Beth. How are you doing?
I'm great. How about you?
Very good. Now, oftentimes we think of opossums as a lot of times as pests and sometimes roadkill, but now we're talking about a rescue. So, what do you do?
Well, oh gosh, it's a big world for them out there. We do anything from taking in the orphans that fall off mom's back or either mom gets killed in the road. We do a lot of education, so we have a lot of people who stop and check the pouches. And although mom, you know, may have passed, the babies are still in her pouch and of need of rescue. So we take a lot of orphans in. We do anything from someone calling thinking they have a giant rat in their garage and they want it removed. So we go. We consider that just helping out with misplaced opossums. And then we get a lot of them who are injured. Dog attacks, that's a really big one because they go in looking for a morsel of food, you know, left out by the owners for their dog. We get in, a lot of them are hit by a car, so we do a lot of the medical end. And fortunately, our state allows for non-releasables. You know, all laws are different.
What state is that?
I'm in South Carolina.
Okay.
Our rescue is in South Carolina. We have received possums as far away as Washington State with the proper paperwork. So we rescue them from a little bit of everywhere. If no one else will take them, we make the proper arrangements and get them in.
Now, can you explain something to me? I already asked Dr. Debbie about this, but I didn't understand. I know how mammals have babies. I'm not quite sure how marsupials have babies. And by the way, the opossum is is North America's only marsupial. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So how
that's
do they do
correct.
It?
Well, upon a night of flirtation and adventure with the male who takes off and is never seen again.
Typical.
13 days later, you have little babies that are born, and they make their way into the pouch just like a kangaroo. And that's where they stay for the next, on an average of about 2.5 months, 2 to 2.5. And their eyes open, they start coming out of the pouch a little bit while mom's sleeping, and then as they get older, they don't fit any longer.
And it's just their instinct that they ride on her back. And
what's the average size of a litter?
From what, and I don't know whether that varies in other areas, but it seems like the average size, if you have a small female, her average litter is going to be about 7 to 8, where if you have a larger female, she can have up to 13. Average is going to be around 9 to 10. Now, we did have a litter of 14 last year. So they say there's only 14 teats on a mom, so that's all she can have. But we did get one in with 13, and their teats are in a circle. They're not like your dog or cat that have them in a row. So their teats are in a circle, and the little baby puts a vapor lock sort of on the mom, and they stay fully attached until they're old enough to where they can break loose their suckle and they start riding on her back. So removing them from the pouch can be a little bit difficult.
it's like kicking that 18-year-old out of the house. You know, when
it's
the same thing.
Pretty much. But we do it all. We get calls from all over. I taught a class in Canada 3 years ago, and that was very intimidating, but it went really well. So we reach out in every aspect of the possum world.
Okay, I have a dome scratcher question for you here. Mm-hmm. The possums, they reach maturity, you say, around 6 months of age, and in the wild, they may live only 12 to 18 months, which is an incredibly short amount of time, less than 2 years.
Yes.
And
yes,
it is. In captivity, they can live up to 4 years. And that's much like, by the way, just for those that don't know it, that's much like cats, that if they were an outdoor cat, they may not live as long as an indoor cat because they're just not up against the element, I guess. But your goal is to rehabilitate them and get them ready to release back into the wild. It seems
that
like
a little...
So we're releasing them back into a shorter lifespan?
Well, you either have that option or you just let them die, which is not an option in our world.
Sure.
Or we do get quite a number that are non-releasable. Our rescue right now has about, I think our last count was right at 38.
Wow.
That were not releasable back into the wild. And that's about average. But and it sounds kind of bad, but we have like a little sanctuary where we, you know, allow our guys to stay. I have 16 in my home right now that had a lovely dinner. But they're it sounds really funny, but their turnover is so quick because of their short life. You are able to rescue and take in a lot more, whereas say you've got a little squirrel that might live 12, 14 years, you know, so if they come in and start mounting up, it makes it a lot harder. But these guys have a very, very hard life in the wild. I would think that out of all the wildlife we have, they're kind of at the bottom of the totem pole.
Sure. You know what? I have some more questions about the opossums. We're going to take a quick break. We are with Beth Sparks. She runs the Opossums Pouch Rescue. They rescue opossums in South Carolina. Hold on a second.
Hello, this is Jane Goodall on Animal Radio, and I'd just like everybody to realize that each day you live, you make some difference on the planet, and you can choose what kind of difference you're going to make, and hopefully every day you'll try to make the world a little bit better for people, for animals, and for the environment.
We're in for a treat with The 12 Days of Snowball by Kristen McKenna, a heartwarming novel partly told from the perspective of a mischievous feline named Snowball. Snowball considers herself the official matchmaker for any lonely humans in her life, and it's a job she takes very seriously. The 12 Days of Snowball by Kristen McKenna is available everywhere books are sold. For more info, visit KristenMcKenna.com. That's KristenMcKenna.com.
You're listening to Animal Radio. If you missed any part of today's show, visit us at AnimalRadio.com or download the Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android.
It is Animal Radio. We are with Beth Sparks, and she heads up the Opossums Pouch Rescue in South Carolina. They rescue opossums, obviously. Are there other opossum rescues in the country?
Do you know, there are a lot of opossum rehabbers who specialize and do only opossums. I don't know that there's any other specific rescue that that's all that they do. Now, I started out with another rescue. We rescued a little bit of everything. It's just opossums, they get in your blood. I mean, you just can't. They're the underdog. I've always been one for the underdog. But I don't know of another rescue that that's all they do, or the opossums. But that's pretty much why we started our nonprofit and our sanctuary, and that's all we do. I don't know of any others that do just the opossums, no.
Well, I want to know, what kind of house guests do they make? Are they nocturnal? Are they messy? Can you teach them to use a litter? Do they have an odor?
This is how, I'm not a major advocate for taking in any wild animal. Of course, state laws doesn't allow it in many places, but I had an older opossum that came in as a rescue, found in a man's garage, and this opossum was blind, and I took him in. They cage quite well because they're so happy to get out of the elements and the hard lifestyle. If they have a hammock or a bed and a good bowl of food and a place to go potty, they're great. This little boy, only because I was running short on cages, he took up residence in my kitty bed in a closet. He came out and he used a stand-up shower to go to the bathroom and made my life very simple. But an opossum will go in water, so training them to go in a stand-up shower or your bathtub is very simple to do. They will litter train. They're nocturnal. They, even as raised as a baby, they tend to get on a nocturnal cycle. They love running on a wheel. They don't play like other mammals, but they love an exercise wheel. So I keep an oil can handy with some Wesson oil just to keep my wheels oiled so I can sleep at night. But they make quite lovely pets. And like I say, they're your thing or they're not. But most people, we have probably, oh gosh, at least 8 or 10 Facebook groups that's nothing but people who have opossums as pets or opossum rehabbers. And we're growing. We're growing daily.
Dr. Debbie,
I have to say that, I mean, you know, we're not necessarily, Beth, you're not advocating that people run out and bring opossums into their home so that they can live a longer lifespan, are you? I mean, they are animal, and they do live outdoors, no more than we're going to start bringing, you know, raccoons and, you know, wild horses into our home. And, you know, we don't have tigers here, but, you know, we wouldn't bring pumas into our home as well. So, you know, I think we could admire and respect them, but, I would, you know, caution folks to start bringing in wild animals that they aren't prepared to care for, like a rehabilitator certainly is.
Right. Well, there are actually breeders. There's a very big, and I'm definitely against that, but there are, there's a big breeding farm in Pennsylvania, and they adopt these little guys out, and I'm very much against that because not a lot of information goes out with them, because with an opossum, their diet is totally different than any other animal. Their medical needs, what works medicine-wise, and a lot of mammals do not work with opossums, and they don't get viruses. Very unlikely will you ever see them with rabies, but they get bacterial infections. So there's a lot going on, but they are up for adoption. In Florida, you can actually get a license to have one as a pet. So we do try to do a lot of education, because if you're going to have one for whatever reason, we just want to make sure the little guys are taken care of properly.
Mm, yeah, absolutely. So how are you funded?
Oh, gosh. Tin cup on a corner, usually.
Yep.
we do have a wonder. We have a great Facebook page of our rescue, and surprisingly, we grew very, very quickly. And we get donations. It's not always cash donations. We get a lot of donations of food and supplies. Just got a freezer and refrigerator, thank goodness, donated for extra food and formula. But we're a nonprofit. It's all ran off of donations.
Can you train an opossum at all? I mean, are they trainable?
Do you know, I associate opossums' behavior very similar to a cat. They can be taught different things. They certainly learn where the treat box is located. and they can, but it's for the most part, it needs to be their idea.
Sure.
They're that much like a cat.
What is the website if people want to learn more?
We actually found our website wasn't visited like our Facebook page.
Okay.
But it's just simply called the Opossum Pouch Rescue and Rehab.
Yeah, we'll put links to that Facebook page over at animalradio.pet. And I'm sure there's a lot of cute pictures up there.
Tons of photos. We can follow the animal stories as they come in, and we get a lot of wonderful people, and we get rescue calls from everywhere of the United States, and we hook them up with the proper people.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for spending time with us today, Beth.
Sure.
Take care of yourself.
Happy to do it.
Bye now.
Mm-hmm.
So, Dr. Debbie, is it true you're working on the book, How to Be Your Opossum's Best Friend?
You know what? Like I said, I respect them. I can adore them from afar, but I don't want them in my house. I like to sleep at night. I am definitely a morning person, so I could not have a nocturnal pet.
Okay, I get that. But check out Dr. Debbie's books, Yorkshire Terriers, Shih Tzus, Pugs, Mini Schnauzers, How to Be Your Dog's Best Friends. And if you need your fix during the week, hit us up over at animalradio.pet or download the Animal Radio app for iPhone, Android, and BlackBerry. We'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
This is Animal Radio Network.